Hey everyone, and welcome back to the First Act Podcast. This is part two of conquering the Canadian music biz with Daryl Herz, founder of Indie Week, managing director of Downtown Music, and CD Baby. Listen in as we deconstruct major changes in the industry, how to thrive as an artist and business professional, and how you can forge your own path in this wild industry. This is an episode you won't want to miss.
And now, hosted by Harry G, this is your one-stop shop for hot talk straight from the top. Whether you're trying to build a job in pop, rock, or any other artsy schlock, here's your top dog with info that can't be bought, it's gotta be sought. So sit back, crack a six-pack, because we're about to chit-chat and rip facts. It's the First Act Podcast.
And how did you find these gems when, you know, they were undiscovered? How did you find them to book them at, you said it's B-side?
Yeah. So I've always been the indie guy. So when I worked at HMV, I took over doing indie consignment. I was doing I would do indie in stores. I was always the indie guy. And it was always about giving an opportunity for an unknown artist to be heard, to be found, to be discovered. And so that's kind of what I was doing at the B-side. And often it was giving opportunities to artists that would probably not get the opportunity at other venues. Yeah, I feel grateful for that experience.
Very interesting. It's funny how things in your life sort of just like kind of lead into each other.
Yeah, it's important to be open. And I think that's kind of going with before talking about people who are like, I need a contract. I need this. Like they're trying to structure things so much that they actually turn away opportunities where I've been one to say, yes, and I'll figure it out. Can you edit video? Yes, not really. But I could watch YouTube on the weekend and I'll figure it out. Or yes, I'll take the job, but I'll hire somebody, keep 20% and it still gets done under my name, you know, stuff like that. By being that way, it's led to all my gigs. And so saying that I've been self-employed since about 97, I have to say every single client and job is a referral. I've never looked for work. And that included CD Baby, Live Nation, Canadian Tire, some big clients. It's all been referrals.
Goes back to building that trust and respect when you're in any one of your roles. Doesn't matter if you're an intern or, you know, a high up exec. So, you know, it's about building those relationships because also you never really know where people are going to end up.
Oh, 1,000% on that one. You never know where they're going to be. I burned some bridges as a musician a couple of times ago, years ago, where, you know, back in the day was totally different than it is now. It was like about rock star attitude, ego, image, a lot of partying. And you kind of had to have that confidence, that bravado, you know, like, hey, you should know who I am and stuff, right? And I totally kind of like brushed off a person and they ended up later on being like an A&R rep at Universal. I was like, oh, I guess we can't send our demo there. You got to be nice to people and you got to understand that everybody has goals. And this is part of that problem solving thing that I was talking about before.
Yeah. Well, Daryl, like, you know, to play devil's advocate there, do you think that he remembered you? Do you think that he remembered you being rude and cocky that one night that you couldn't send it?
Guaranteed. Yes. So a couple of things I would say is more sort of advice on clients and relationships. Two main points I would say is whatever their expectations, over deliver, go above and beyond. Don't just go bare minimum. Go like, oh, I didn't expect that. I did that. And oh, well, how much extra? No, all good. I, because one thing that I've learned is repeat business is the easiest client acquisition possible. I didn't have to go looking for them. They came and called me. I didn't have to put any effort in. I didn't have to do any searching and looking. They come to me. So when you do get a client or working on a project, over deliver, whatever expectation is, do way above it, right? And then the other part is whatever the deadline is, try to deliver ahead of the deadline, not on the deadline, right? On the deadline means if there's like, oh, well, we need to change to this, there's no time. So just know that there's always going to be some edits, some changes, some something or other. And this is often like, hey, we're going to book a tour. I'm going to try to book it before we need to do the marketing. And to get to do the marketing, I need to book it way in advance to know what assets are going to need to be created. And to get, I just got to do everything ahead of time. And so, waiting to me kills everything. Like, what are you waiting for? Book it, call them, email them. Like, let's get this done, you know? And so often I've also done things where I feel, I call it like there's efficiencies where if you work at a highly efficient level, you could actually get more done in a short period of time, maximizing results. So along with a problem solver, I try to automate everything. I try to make things as efficient as possible. And so I kind of also call myself, I'm an optimizer. I optimize workflows. I optimize how we do things. So we could do things with, and this is being self-employed, learning profitability is you want to do minimum work for maximum output. So I used to love these jobs. So Canadian Tire, for instance, I talk about Canadian Tire. They came to me when they're like, we're in trouble. We're 4 weeks ahead away from launching our website, and we are not ready. They needed to process all their product images, over 8,000 images of all their products. And it was like big image, medium image, small image, thumbnail, this, that. And they're like, I'll do that. And I was able to automate 4 to 6 computers at the same time. This is in 1999. And process all the images in 3 weeks. They had 1 week still. And they're like, how'd you do that? Just working on efficiencies, right? And when you do that, I still got paid the same as if I worked 4 weeks. So my rate goes up in the sense that I did it in 3 weeks, paid the same. Oh, it's like I got a 25% raise.
Yeah.
So this is what I've thought over the years is, well, what if I did it in 25% of the time and get 75% raise? So that's how I've looked at most of my projects is whenever I've had a project and there's a quote, here's a price. I'd like to keep that price the same. This is why I don't often do hourly rates. And so therefore, I can get it done in the time I decide on. And if I decide to do it in a very short amount of time, I'm going to get still paid that check. We're profitable.
And it's a motivator for yourself.
Absolutely. And so that's how sometimes people are like, well, how is it that you're working here and doing this and this? It's because I've optimized everything I do as much as possible. So, you know, as IndieWeek, we run 4 online conferences a year. We have Indie 1-1 coming up in May. So we do 4 online conferences a year. We do a weekly free webinar every Tuesday called Indie Weekly. We do put that out as an audio podcast every Thursday. We just launched an online platform for the music community. It's called DIT, which is Do It Together. And it's like having our own Facebook and LinkedIn, but all for music. And everyone's like, how do you do all this stuff? I automate as much as I can. And I make everything as efficient as I can. And we get maximum results in that amount of time.
Can we talk about DIT for a moment?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you said that it's for musicians, but like a social platform for them?
Exactly. Yes. It operates very much like Facebook, but has that networking capability like LinkedIn. And as well, we're curating the content on there. So there's educational content for musicians. We've got legal advice happening, monetizing streaming, playlist pitching, getting your artist tools together for Spotify. And we're constantly growing on the content that we're putting out. So it's curated content. And so you're not seeing like ads and fake posts and stuff you don't want to see. It's all music.
That's really cool.
Or music industry, music education.
And is it for business professionals or is it primarily for artists or is it a combination?
It's both. Yeah, it's both. And it's going to build. We just launched it, I would say, 6 weeks ago. So it's still infancy stage. You know, right now there's 500-ish people on there and we're expecting that to double in the next 4 weeks. And then it just keeps growing. It's international. We've got some pretty heavyweights on industry that are on there that you could literally just chat with. You could put a question up like, hey, I'm looking to tour in the States, in the New York region. Any recommendations? And somebody might go, I'm from New York. I'll help you out. So it's building that platform. And you know, it kind of came out of COVID where we're all remote and thinking about every artist is struggling. And we get that. And we hear a lot about it where, oh man, I'm having to book my own shows. I have to be the promoter. I have to still write music. I still need to record the music. They're working so hard by themselves. And we almost kind of been brought up by, well, it's on you to do everything, where maybe we can make it easier. Maybe we can give resources that answers are easily found, advice is easily found, and connections can be made. So that's what DIT is all about.
I like it. I like the name, Do It Together. It reminds me of, are you in the Facebook group Artist Managers Connect?
I might be. I'm not on Facebook as much these days. I'm more Instagram.
It's one of the few reasons why I still use a Facebook. That group is very valuable. So if you aren't in that one yet, I'd be more than happy to invite you.
Yeah, please do.
And for any students out there that are looking to be a music business professional, or, you know, sometimes there's even, you know, if you want to be a promoter or an agent or anything like that, there's tons. I'd say it's probably the biggest group of credible individuals in music. The key word there is credible individuals.
Credible, that's right. You know, and as we grow this, we're going to be doing more live sessions, more advice, more Q&As, giveaways, some perks.
That's cool.
Contesting. And people are always asking me, are you going to do anything in person again? Not really. We're not planning on doing anything. It's all online. Like when we do our indie weeklies, we get people tuning in from like Portugal to UK to Brazil, Chile, Argentina. We've had people from Israel, Africa, Netherlands, Japan, all on a webinar. And you know, that's powerful stuff. And we've also held B2B sessions where we had international bookers meet with artist representatives. There's a band called Soft Cult. And off of our sort of online B2B at one of our conferences, they got booked to play Bangkok first time. Brand new band. I think it was their fifth show ever in existence as Soft Cult, playing Bangkok. All expenses paid. They sold out 500 cap room.
Wow.
They've just announced their tour of Asia now, which is off of that same promoter. And now they're touring Asia from the promoter they met online. And so we look at meet online to do business in person. You can meet anybody online from anywhere online. So where is your market as an artist? You can now start growing a fan base or a community within that market without having to go there, meet with industry professionals from that market, and do business and be more successful out of the gate when you go there for the very first time.
Right. And that, and a lot more cost efficient as well. You know, I liked what you said that, you know, meet online and then do business in person. It's a really great slogan to kind of tag that in. What I was going to say is it also creates some opportunities for newcomers coming into entertainment in those markets. Because if you're tapped in and, you know, you feel like there might be a need to do like a meetup, even if it's 10 people or 5 people from your industry that are all kind of curious about kind of working together or collaborating, if you're like, hey, we really want Daryl to put this DIT together, but Daryl's not doing it because he's focusing only on online, well, then that's an opportunity that you can actually fill that need. And you can be somebody that's bringing people together in person in your hometown or in the market that you operate in.
Yeah. Well, that's one plan that we do have is I go to conferences. And so if we have enough members that are interested in an area that I'm going to be, I'll be like, hey, I could host a DIT meetup. And that is in the works. So, but we're still kind of focused on growing the online community first. And then we'll have numbers in different areas and we'll start doing DIT meetups.
Got it. Okay. And all of that falls under the Indie Week umbrella?
Yeah. DIT is owned by Indie Week.
Okay.
And eventually what the goal is right now, we do online conferences and Indie Weeklies. That's our weekly session. They're going to, by hopefully, fingers crossed, by Q3 this year, they're all going to move under the DIT umbrella. So it'll be one place to go for the conferences, for the indie weeklies, the podcast. It's because of COVID. Like, this is the thing, problem solver. I couldn't do our festival live. That's the problem. Okay, well, let's do a conference online. That worked. Well, let's do another conference online because we can't wait 12 months. Well, we might as well do more. And so we end up doing one every quarter. Okay, well, that's working and growing. But it's hard to build each one individually. All right, well, let's build a platform that we can move it to all under one place eventually. All right. So it's all been necessities of problem solving to kind of tie up back to how we started. Is this is all based off of can't do what we can't normally do because of COVID. And none of this was originally the plan. And now we are 1,000% invested in it because we've seen the results already in the small things we've done. And now I'm like, wow, if we, the big plans we have, we could really, really have a big impact.
So a lot of what you're working on revolves around community and developing community. And I'm curious to ask, you know, with this new wave of technology with, like, we'll call it Web3, right? Where there's like cryptocurrency and NFTs and all of this sort of stuff, communities or micro communities have started to formulate. And a lot of them live on platforms like Telegram or Discord. You know, those are like, I'd say like the main ones. And we've seen a lot of like the younger demos flocking to those. Have you considered, or have you already started looking into moving some community there or developing on those platforms?
Yes and no. Our bandwidth is stretched where I don't think we could add value by adding a new component right now at this time. We are in talks with some people potentially on that though. So in the future, yes. So we're not blind to it. It's just the fact that if we're going to do it right now, our bandwidth would stretch and we wouldn't do it well. And I think that that's very important to have that certain level of consistency to build really trust. I think, like, you know, everything we talk about fits together. Online, you're building digital trust. That's the thing. And you're doing it through consistency of what does your images look like? What is the text that you say? Because you're not sitting next to that person watching your Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or whatever you're putting out there and going, oh, by the way, I mean this. No, they're reading it and internalizing it themselves and going, I'll either engage or not.
Right.
And so by having a high level of consistency, you start building trust and then they start coming back and engaging more. And that's how you really build community, because why do you go to a certain venue that you like all the time? Because you like what they do, because it's consistently good sound, good sight lines, good bands, treated well by the staff. You know, you can kind of like, that's your checkbox of a venue, and you can start going, oh, that, I'm always treated poorly. The bands are never that good. You're going to stop going. So if you take real world thought and real world experiences and kind of translate it to how do we do this in the digital world, it's really very much the same. And the biggest thing is, and I've been using this phrase, I stole it from Tim O'Reilly of O'Reilly Press. So if you're a coder, you know O'Reilly Press. That was the HTML, CSS, JavaScript books back in the day. And in an early interview, he said, this was going on a new web, sort of like the next web. I think they were talking about HTML5, but they're asking, like, could you give a definition? And he said, people add value. And that's it, right? He added that, you know, if you open up a database that people can contribute, it'll build, blah, blah, which is if you think eBay, YouTube, Twitter, all the social platforms, they would all be empty if people didn't add anything to it.
Yeah, they would just be a shell.
They'd be a shell. And the funny part is this, Twitter, blue bar and a logo, Facebook, blue bar and a logo, and LinkedIn, a blue bar and a logo. It's that all be the same kind of thing. So the thing is, people go there because the value of other people being there and other people contributing and then them being able to contribute themselves. And then that starts collaboration. And so none of that would exist without the people. And that really translates into building an artist. Anytime I've done artist development, we focused on people first. And a lot of times people are like, well, how do I make money? Sell tickets, sell shirts. Who do you sell it to? People. How do I get more streams? That too would be people. How do I get more views? Well, that too is also people. So often people are focusing on ways to get around things and oh, that costs something. I want to get around that. Or that if you focus on the result, which is more people, you're going to be more successful faster. So we really focus on our audience. We really focus on our community. What are their needs? What is it they want? We want to offer that. And that's how you build community, and that's how you build fan bases. And it's very much the same as how we're doing this is grassroots, organic. We're taking the steps of building an artist, a band, a brand new band. I've never played a show. How do they fill a room? People. All right. Well, here we have a new platform. How we fill it? People. So we're using strategies that are the very same as building an artist and building an audience. And once you realize that, you can literally take that to any business. You know, hey, I want to open a pizza shop. How am I successful? Sell pizza to people. So the bottom equation always is focus on people. If they trust you, if they had a great experience, if they love what you're doing, then they're going to be passionate with you. And that's what fan frenzy is with a band. You know, like you go to see your favorite band, you'll travel for them. You'll buy a ticket. You're going to buy a ticket 6 months in advance and plan a whole tour or trip around it because you're passionate. And so that's the thing about digital works. I think it hasn't worked because people have treated it like it's not in person. So therefore I'm doing it differently and they've alienated people. So I think people go, well, that didn't work. I'm like, you're right. Over there, that example did not work because they didn't treat people like people and they didn't build community. So that's a bit of a long-winded answer, but hopefully that helps.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it really needs to be authentic. Now, you know, I want to shift gears for a moment. Where do you see the music industry headed?
Thanks for tuning in to part two. Stay tuned for part three. Remember, new episodes release every Thursday at 12 p.m. Pacific. See you there.